Britain feels broken, but how do we fix it?
Westminster just doesn't seem to have the answers, but we have found some people who do.
Join me, journalist Becca Hudson.
And me, the former MP Ed Vasey, for How I'd Fix.
From the price of a pint to the housing crisis, this is the show where we take an alternative look at the problems plaguing the nation.
And hear practical solutions from those in the know. Catch new episodes of How I'd Fix wherever you get your podcasts. Rebuilding Britain starts here.
The home of common sense. This is Talk.
Welcome back to Morning Glory with me, Mike Graham. I'm here with you every single morning. I could not be happier. Ladies and gentlemen, 6.30 to 10 o'clock. Loads of you listening. Loads more of you will be joining. Tell all your friends I'm back because this is where the nation comes to talk. But let's talk now about the BBC because, quite frankly, the BBC is back in the news constantly, every single week. I don't know how things keep going from bad to worse. We've got Hugh Edwards being told to stop talking to various different women 3 years ago. We've now got an inquiry that's been launched, apparently, to see whether the BBC should receive yet more money from the government, i.e. you and I, the taxpayer, to help project what they call UK's values across the world. This is the World Service we're talking about. They received more than £100 million in funding from the Foreign Office. Tim David, the Director General, has warned the service needs help. Now, actually, you might be surprised to hear this. I don't think the World Service is a bad thing. The World Service actually is one part of the BBC that probably works. But what we don't need is a load of rubbish about the BBC's diversity campaigns going out around the world. So let's find out from Roger Bolton, former BBC presenter and podcast host, what this is all about. Roger, a very good morning to you. Welcome to the Home of Common Sense. Welcome to Morning Glory with Mike Graham.
Good morning. May I just say that, apart from common sense, that introduction was utterly rubbish about the BBC. And I know you like people to speak frankly. I thought you'd like to know that's what I
thought
about
it. Which bit of it did you think was rubbish?
Well, your general arguments about the BBC, whatever. But anyway...
Sorry. You don't get away with but anyway. No. Hang on, Roger. You don't get away with but anyway. If you want to say...
If you want to tell me it's rubbish...
No, hang on. You want to tell me it's rubbish, tell me which bit of it was rubbish.
All right. You get away with introductions which to a complicated subject about the BBC World Service, about the British government's desire for generations to transmit news across the world. It is a really serious issue about projecting our value, our power, and you do an introduction which manages to get Hugh Edwards into it.
Hugh Edwards worked for the BBC until last week, didn't he?
Yes, no, this is about the World Service.
What do you mean managed to get Hugh Edwards into it? Are you going
to
tell... Hang on.
This is a serious question,
Roger,
about whether or not you and the British government want to have a service, the World Service, which transmits our values, our belief in liberal democracy across the world or not. It's for Parliament to decide that. Now,
right.
The problem with...
Well, hang on a second, Roger. Before you go any further, you still haven't told me which bit of what I said was rubbish. Presumably, you don't mean the bit where I said, I actually think the World Service does a pretty good job. That wasn't rubbish, was it?
No, that part wasn't rubbish.
Oh, OK. So why, which part was rubbish, then?
Why, in a discussion about the future of the World Service, which is a serious issue, do you actually throw in the introduction anything you like to say about the BBC and your value view about value to money?
Well, because if Hugh Edwards is a recognition of the values of the BBC, I'm afraid I don't think we want to spread that to Djibouti or anywhere else that's been taken over by China.
As you well know, Hugh Edwards has resigned from the BBC, had a serious mental breakdown.
Why are you talking about it?
Because you did so in your introduction.
No, I didn't. I mentioned him as part of the background to the BBC's funding problem because we paid this man a great deal of money when he didn't do anything for it.
This is different from the World Service. Should we talk about the World Service?
Yeah, but you understand the word context, Roger, don't you?
I do indeed.
So when we talk about the BBC, the BBC is not a series of compartmentalised little pods where one thing doesn't take any reference to point to another, right?
It does. Right, briefly explain this.
We're out of time already. Oh, we're out of time. Sorry, Roger. Listen, I'm terribly sorry. We've got to go. You wasted all that time talking about Hugh Edwards instead of the values of the BBC. What a complete plonker. Well, we've been playing you some footage through the show this morning. This is footage that came in from The Sun. The reporting team of The Sun had seen some migrants hiding in sand dunes in a place called Gravelines, some 10 miles from Calais. We're going to speak now, as you watch this, as you watch the French officials, the French Border Patrol, basically sticking a knife into the dinghy to make all of those migrants get out of the dinghy, not very happy, walking back into the shore. Daniel Hammond from The Sun was actually there. He actually watched what happened. So let's talk to him right now. Daniel, very good morning to you. Welcome to the first inaugural Morning Glory with Mike Graham.
Morning, Mike.
How the devil are you? It looks like a pretty interesting scene there. There's an awful lot of migrants on one boat there. How many would you say there were?
There was at least 100 people in the area. Wow. I'd say most on board.
About 100 people. And so, I mean, I've been advocating that the French should do this on a regular basis. They do it from time to time, where they take out a knife and just puncture the dinghy. It seems to me it's the safest way to stop them coming. You know, they're not in any trouble. The water's not going to be a problem for them. They're literally ankle deep in it. I don't know why they don't do more of it.
Well, they're actually incredibly lucky on this occasion. Mm. The boat was so heavy, it actually come towards the shore and they're able to get to it.
Right. Because is their normal sort of modus operandi to set off from one of the little canals that feeds into the channel, and by the time you've spotted them, they're quite far out?
Yeah, exactly. It's just a game of cat and mouse. Mm. And it's not just in Gravelin, it's all across the North French coast.
Right.
And it's almost an impossible task to monitor it at all times.
Yeah, it does. I mean, so tell us about your sort of experience, what you saw the time when you were there. How many boats would you see? How many migrants? I know you said there was about 100 there at the time. I've heard stories of eyewitnesses saying basically buses pull up with migrants on them and they all get off and get into a dinghy.
Well, I mean, we certainly saw the buses, but the French police were actually trying to stop people. Mm. So you see the guys, they get off, they come from the jungle, which is in a place called Lune Plage, right, about 15 minutes drive away. And then they will hide in the sand dunes and wait for the French police to, you know, basically go to bed.
Right.
And then make the dash towards the boat, get on board and sort of hope for the best, really.
Yes. And do you get the impression that if for some reason they are foiled and they can't... I mean, does it look as though it's orderly? Are they getting on the boats kind of at their own speed, or is there somebody sort of organising them to get on?
I mean, to talk you through exactly what happened just before you've seen that boat deflated.
Yeah.
So myself and my cameraman, Louis Woods, we were on this beach from 3 a.m. till 7 a.m. We thought, okay, we're not going to see anything tonight. That's just common with, you know, reporters trying to cover this.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, we saw 100 people dash towards the shoreline. There were two French police cars there, and they started firing off tear gas, and they were trying to incapacitate these people before they made it to the shore,
right,
trying to chase people down, trying their best to sort of herd them away. But it didn't work. I mean, you saw the boat was deflated. The French police were laughing, thinking, oh, you know, happy days. We've shown the English press that we're actually doing the job. But just moments later, another boat turned up. I reported that there's a taxi boat service happening now. So instead of the traditional, let's carry the boat, slowed down and sort of hope for the best, there's now these high-speed dinghies tearing up the coast away from the prying eyes of the French police and picking these people up.
Right.
And it's all orchestrated by about four human traffickers who you could see standing back and directing this caravan of people.
Yeah.
They run back, there's more tear gas going off, there are people falling on the floor, coughing, and it all seemed very disorganized. And then all of a sudden, they formed a caravan again, went straight for the coast. This time it caught the French police by surprise. And this was the time they actually made it away.
Right.
But the French police, they stood there. They're absolutely deflated themselves.
Right. Because it's like you say, it's a game of numbers, isn't it? And if there's that many people and the boats keep coming, a lot of them are going to end up getting through. It's like the principle of drug dealers, isn't it? When they say if the border force somehow intercepts a boat loaded with cocaine, there's about 9 others that probably get through. And that seems to be a similar problem here, doesn't it?
It does. And you actually see that some of these guys are staging landings with smaller numbers of people just to divert the attention away from the police there.
Yeah.
And ultimately, the migrants, I spoke to many of them, their resolve is greater than that of the French police.
Right. Well, I saw a story this weekend, I don't know if you did as well, Daniel, about a character who's, I think, 17 or 18 years of age, from some country in Africa, who says his mother's living in Britain. He's going to keep trying to get here until he does. And he's got nowhere else to go. And I think that's where a lot of them come from. And presumably many of them have already paid the piper, as it were. They've already paid a fee to these traffickers. And they just have to wait their turn.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, young lad you're referring to, Abdul Usman, 17. He'd spent months travelling over to northern France and the last 7 months in that camp I mentioned earlier in Lune Plage. So he tried 100 times to try and get on board a boat. So the difference is with Abdul and someone from a more sort of wealthy background, such as those people coming from Vietnam that I spoke to, is Abdul had no money. So he was trying to rush the boat at the last minute and hope for the best. Such was his desperation. He thought he'd just try every day, and he had done for 7 months.
Right.
Whereas I referred to the Vietnamese people, which is a bit of a new phenomenon here. Some of them are paying up to £10,000 each for this taxi service that I referenced. So they're the ones that are going to get on board first. There's two classes of migrants, really, making for the shores and towards Dover.
Right. Incredible. Well, great reporting, Daniel. Really good to see you doing it. Thank you very much indeed. Take care of yourself when you're over there. Daniel Hammond there reporting in from the Sun, from the northwest coast, I should say, of France, near Calais, just 10 miles away. An incredible situation. I think until you see that, it's hard to know. And somebody earlier was saying, oh, yeah, the thing is that, you know, the French are just doing this for show. Doesn't sound like that. Sounds like they're...
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Being overwhelmed. It's time to welcome the one and only Kinsey Schofield from the To Die For podcast, live from California. Because guess what? He's coming back. Harry's back. Kinsey, a very good morning to you. Welcome to Morning Glory with Mike Graham.
Mike, I wish I would have been prepared with my confetti. I didn't realize the introduction was going to include so much enthusiasm, and I appreciate that. But I don't know if it's necessarily authentic, sincere. Like you said, Prince Harry expected to be back for the 10th anniversary of the Invictus Games. Meghan Markle, surprisingly, not expected to attend with him. The only reason I say that is because I think it's going to look very sad for Prince Harry to be there without any members of his family to celebrate the Invictus Games at St. Paul's Cathedral. And I thought Meghan would recognize that and want to be there to support him. But reports saying that she's going to stay behind except to meet him in Nigeria.
Yes.
The following day.
Yes.
They're in such high demand.
Yeah. And the funny thing is that, you know, to get from the US to Nigeria, you kind of have to fly over Britain. So you might think that she would think about stopping over, even if just to show him some moral support, to be home in the hotel room. Yeah.
The carbon footprint?
let's not mention the carbon footprint. But, you know, this is all coming, you know, out of their kind of headquarters, if you like, as kind of a bit late in the day, isn't it? I mean, I wasn't aware that he was coming back. You may have been coming back in May, but that's what he's going to be doing. It's going to be a bit awkward because his father, the King, is going to be hoping to be out and about, trooping the colour. He's thinking of being seen in public again, getting back to work. We know that Prince William is still not speaking to him, unlikely to see him. It's all going to be a bit embarrassing, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that this is a really interesting time for him to come back. I do think he's going to make a significant effort to see King Charles, not only because of the king's health issues, but because Harry and Meghan monetize their relationship with the British royal family. And it's very important that they continue to remind the world, and especially Americans, that they have that connection, because that is how they truly make their money over here.
Right.
So he will, I think, make an effort to see his father. I agree with everyone that says there's no way that there will be a visit with Prince William and the Princess of Wales.
I mean, do you think he might bring some jam with him to give to the king? Because, of course, you know, what used to be the Duchy of Cornwall, run by the king, is now run by his son, William. I think they make jam as well. Maybe they could say, was there any chance you could stock this in the, you know, the online store for the Duchy of Cornwall?
Well, I'm sure that they have quality control over there that Meghan's probably not having to deal with over here. It's interesting you say that, because here in the States, I'm a little annoyed by these headlines. Who will get a jar of jam next?
Right.
All the entertainment sites are hyping up these 50 mystery people that are receiving the jars of jam. And I really could care less.
Right.
I didn't make the list, and that's all right. I'm not on Meghan's nice list. Right. I'm on the naughty list.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. If you do get some jam from her, I wouldn't eat it, to be honest, because there might be something in it that might not do you very much good. But Nigeria is an interesting one. Apparently, Meghan has worked out recently that that's part of her heritage. So, you know, fair enough. She wants to go and check it out. But what will they do in Nigeria exactly?
I mean, they are going to meet with some service members. Now, this invitation was extended to them because Harry met a representative at the last Invictus Games in Germany, and they got on really well. So they have been invited to come spend some time. They're going to meet some service family members and their families and participate in cultural activities. As you said a moment ago, Meghan Markle announced on her Archetypes podcast that she's 43% Nigerian, and said on that podcast that she intended to investigate further and get to know her roots a little bit better. I think that, of course, this will try to be marketed as a mini royal engagement. Mm. But we have got to remind ourselves, these people quit. This is a visit. This is a casual visit. And we should not brand it a mini royal engagement either, because these are two people that chose to leave their posts. They didn't want that job.
And I know it's a horny old question to ask, but will she be flying, do you think, commercial long haul? Because you can't really take a private jet to Nigeria, can you?
Mike, I think that you know the answer to that question.
You think she's going to find one?
I think that Meghan Markle is what Meghan wants, Meghan gets. Remember, Harry said it first. What, right. Meghan wants, Meghan gets.
Yes, I'm sure. Yeah, so maybe she'll make a few hops then. She'll stop somewhere, get on one private jet, get on another one. You know what I mean? It could be that she'll need to somehow stop just as she gets to Europe. I mean, I don't see how you can fly all the way from California, you know, in one hop to Nigeria. You just can't do it.
I don't, you know, because from what we understand, Harry and Meghan say that she and the children don't tag along because of security. I highly doubt that they would deny Prince Harry security to come over to support, to promote Invictus Games, one of the greatest things that came out of his time as a member of the British royal family. You know, the Invictus Games does Britain proud. He will get the security that he wants during his visit. Meghan would in turn get the security she wants during the visit. This is all, I don't think it's a safety concern. I think it's Meghan not liking the United Kingdom. And, right. And that's so disappointing, because the United Kingdom made Meghan the star that she is today.
Yes. Although my message to Harry is, please don't bring her. I think it'd be better if he came on his own and just get it over with, you know, hang around for a couple of days and then get lost. That's my message to him.
The home of common sense. This is Talk.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. and they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.